I think that meant that I was a little bit out of place, or I felt out of place. And I felt like I needed to make the move quite quickly, because the allure of the job, I think, is no matter what sort of doubts you have, they shower you with money. I didn't want to get trapped in a gilded cage, and I just thought, if I need to break out of this cycle early on.
Welcome to Secrets of the City, the show where we uncover the stories behind the people who work in the highly lucrative yet enigmatic jobs of the City of London. I'm your host, Ayush Santalia.
And today we speak to Min Park. Min is originally from South Korea and lived in New Zealand for 12 years before moving to the UK for university. He studied economics at Cambridge University before starting off his career in consulting at the firm OCNC Strategy Consultant in London. He now works for a company called Unreasonable, which is a venture capital firm slash accelerator that focuses on climate tech ventures only. And we'll talk about that later in the episode. But in between OCNC and Unreasonable, Min had a brief stint at HG, the private equity firm, a very common exit path for people in consulting.
Private equity is essentially the buying and selling of companies. And private equity kind of stands for, well, the word equity stands for like the ownership. And private equity means it is like a private transaction, meaning a business will come in and take over a business that's not on the public market. Because you then own the business, you make some operational improvements to it, either make it leaner, make it more efficient, help it grow faster and further, in order to create more value so that by the time you sell the business is worth more. Historically, private equity has a pretty bad rep. The typical, or at least in the past, the ways in which the private equity firms would generate value from the businesses they would buy would be to kind of shave costs. They would be like, well, if we make the business very lean, there will be more profit left over. And obviously the easiest way to shave costs is to shave off the labor costs of the business, so firing people. So obviously that doesn't go down well with the business that you've just bought. You come in and you're like, I'm the owner, I'm now going to fire loads of people. This is great for you as this holistic idea of a business, but actually the business at the end of the day is a bunch of people working in an office, or, you know, or a factory, or you name it. And so it you can see why it doesn't get a good reputation. But the other side of it is a very well remunerated industry. The scale of money that you're talking at is like starts at the millions and ends at the billions. And so like the money that you're talking about and the money that it flows down through as a profit on the transaction is just pretty astronomical from like an individual's perspective. So it's a very well remunerated industry. It can be quite complex. So, you know, you have the kind of banker type people with the suits and the lawyers who support you on the deals, and not everyone can understand the specific type of lingo or the financial engineering that is happening. That can be interesting and hard to do. So it's just the combination of those factors of, oh, it's very well paid. Not many people have the experience to go and do this. Is probably the reason why private equity feels very appealing to a lot of people who have started off their careers in consulting or banking or remunerated. Because that's sort of the idea that they've been brought up with. It's like, yeah, let's do something that's hard to do, that requires a bit of thinking, but is really well paid.
Is that why you left OCNC to join HG? Was it, as you say, the remuneration, doing difficult problems, doing something that maybe not necessarily everyone can do?
Yeah, I think so. I think before going in, there is this like allure of private equity being this, you know, this holy grail of jobs, where if you go, you make it out, you're a millionaire. And obviously in like these circles, people talk about it like, oh, you went into private equity, oh wow, which fund, and oh, what deals are you doing? And you're like, you know, it has a sort of like status around it, and obviously that is quite a pleasurable feeling, like without sounding like an awful human being, like that feels good when someone's like, oh, like you got that job, that's so cool, or whatever. Not many people say that's cool. They just sort of like look at you being like, oh, like you're making loads of money. But, but I think so. And I think another part of the PE job that is interesting, is that was more appealing than I say consulting, is probably like the sort of ownership that you get in driving a project from start to finish and kind of seeing it, and then you almost have skin in the game because your remuneration is directly tied to the performance of this business that you're working on. And so in that sense, you're no longer kind of, you're sort of still in this ivory tower, but you're no longer, you're one step closer out of it. Because say in a direct comparison to consulting, like consulting is really fun, really nice, like good intellectual problems, but I feel like it's very short. Like the projects can be a few weeks to a few months, fine, but then at the end of the day you walk away from the table knowing you've done some really cool intellectual acrobatics, but you're now moving on. Like you don't see that through, you're not really sure what's going to be implemented, what recommendations the clients like long term, and how the business is going to change. Whereas I guess in the private equity role it's slightly more hands-on. The fund that I was involved in had a specific portfolio team, is just a team full of kind of ex-consultants or ex-industry experts who have now permanently joined the fund to help all the portfolio companies that the fund has brought in. The portfolio team would work with the deal team to kind of craft projects based on what they see in the profit and loss statement. So if revenue seems like it's going to be missing target, like they would go in to see, well, is it the sales function? Is it the marketing function that needs help? Or is it churn? And so you would kind of pinpoint the areas in which that improvements could be made. And then the portfolio team would come in and work with management to basically do a more involved consulting project in the sense that you kind of are implementing it together to help the business meet the targets.
And what did that actually look like on a day-to-day basis? You know, I mean, I've spoken to people on the show who did consulting, and they talk about on a day-to-day basis, it's a lot of Excel, it's a lot of PowerPoint, it's doing analysis, it's figuring out how to present that in a narrative, in a storyline to then, you know, convince the client to do a specific course of action. I imagine it's a little bit different in PE, but what would that actually look like? For example, what would a typical day for you look like when you were at HG?
Yeah. So I would kind of start by saying I was in the portfolio team, for which the day-to-day looks quite different to the deal team. So the deal team are the people who are bringing the companies in, doing the origination and doing the transaction. And the portfolio team's kind of, like I said before, just kind of work with the companies that are already there in the fund. So the day-to-day naturally looks kind of different. I'd say the deal team would probably be doing more, especially if they're on a live deal, be doing a lot of Excel, doing a lot of writing up of memos, so thinking of the thesis of why are we buying this, what does the market dynamic look like, all of that stuff that is really important to understand before actually buying a company in a specific industry. But then the portfolio team, it would be quite similar to a consulting firm, I'd say.
So, okay.
But it was the only thing different was it was less scoped out. The day-to-day was kind of yours to plan out and yours to execute on. By that I mean, you know, when you're working with a portfolio company, it's not like a consulting project where the scope has been decided by a partner who sold the project, and there is a letter of engagement where there are a certain number of deliverables that you're going to work on. In PE, it's like, well, it's sort of like the scope is very brief. It's kind of like, oh, churn is 7% and not 3%. How are we going to get churn to down to 3%? And right. So you're working off that scope. So it's very broad. So there's a lot of thinking around, well, who do I need to engage amongst the management or the portfolio company? How do I engage them? Is it a PowerPoint slide? Usually that helps to engage the conversation. And so you do go with that, or maybe it's a nice email, or maybe it's just a call, like without any sort of visual prep. But you sort of decide which mode of conversation would be the most useful, but then you're then kind of working it out with them. So you're kind of creating the scope. There may be Excel analysis involved if if there is sort of a kind of proof point or an area you want to understand a little bit more, then maybe requesting data from the portfolio company. There will be a lot of workshops because essentially you're trying to align everyone on the problem as well as the potential solutions and the timelines for implementing these solutions. And so I'd say it's quite varied, but the only thing that, but actually rather similar if you look at the actual activities to consulting. You know, the PowerPoint's still there, the Excel is still there, still thinking right. about structuring your emails and your thoughts are still there. But I guess the only thing that was really quite different for me was that there was no, you know, clear timeline of this week we're going to achieve this. And it was almost up for you to set and just ensure that the final objective was met.
And how would the companies respond to someone like you, man in a suit and sitting in a nice office, and there's an actual company who's building a, you know, they're on the ground, they're building a product, and you come in and you're like, your churn is 7%, you need to get it down to 3%, if not, like, we're not going to invest in you anymore. Like, how do they respond to something like that? Are they pretty hostile?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, because I think it can, it, there's a lot of dynamics at play in how the relationship works. So on one hand, they see someone like me, young, you know, fresh-faced person who clearly has had no real life experience, coming in, like, pretty excited, like, seems pretty, like, wanting to say stuff. And obviously they're like, who is this person, like, coming in, like, talking to me about customer success when I am the customer success, like, lead of this yeah. company, and I've done this for 10 years, you know? Yeah. And so there is this kind of, like, them trying to measure you and then clearly being like, I'm not sure how much this person knows. And so you always come, at least I felt like you're always coming off like a little bit of a penalty of, you know, you have to prove yourself to get their respect first, both in like the professional sense, but also in a personal sense. You know, it's you kind of want to become their friend and ally, because you're doing this together. Like, it's good if we both succeed, because you hold your job and I hold my job too. And we're all happy. Like, kind of we're in the same boat here, so there's kind of no point for you to be hostile to me. And I think they get that. The thing that helped me the most in getting the trust of the management team had always been to do them a favor of sorts. So we would be working on a project and, for instance, say this head of customer success had to make a presentation to the board, which is, you know, their senior management people plus people in the private equity fund, like the partners in the private equity fund. And so that's a pretty intense audience for them. And, you know, these people are functional experts. They know customer success in and out, like how to treat customers well, etc. But they don't know how to present to a board very well. And in that sense, the consulting skills come in really, really handy, because you know what kind of executives want to see and how they want to see it. You would take that board doc and say, we want you to look good. And so I'm going to take a turn at this. And basically, I just turn that into like a really, really presentable kind of board doc. I think doing things yeah. like that, making life easier for them, really helps in building the trust. And then they see sort of what sort of value add you can bring.
I want to spend a bit of time just talking about your new job. So at Unreasonable, so as you said at the start, it's a bit of VC, a bit of an accelerator. It's kind of a bit of both. You left AHG after, I think it was a little under a year in the business. What was the reason for moving at that stage, you know, relatively early on into your career in PE? What was the reason for moving from there into where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty simple, really. I don't think I was enjoying the job very much, and that's kind of what it came down to. I figured, actually, there were like little bits about the job that were really enjoyable. Say, the reduced, like the much improved work-life balance, which was great, but so things I knew I was able to get elsewhere, and the really good remuneration, and this like a tickling of the ego that you get when you go to a pub and say you work in PE, and people in our circles or people who want to be in our circles, like, just kind of know that and know that to be a good job. And so that was that sort of tickling of the ego was honestly felt good, and the money feels good, and the promise of even more money feels good. But I guess despite those positives, I didn't really enjoy the job in the sense that it felt like I didn't need to exist, like, and for the companies to function. So even if the private equity fund didn't buy that company, like, was the company going bust? Probably not. We bought very stable software businesses that were generating recurring revenues and recurring profits and had very strong growth potential. It didn't feel like I needed to be there. And also, well, the fund didn't need to be there. And also, I wasn't sure what value I was having. Like I said, like, going back to that example of, like, let's improve churn by 7 percentage points, 4 percentage points to 3%. It's like, well, like, was my involvement actually needed for that to happen? Or did they actually have it figured out and I was just providing some structural clarity to the problem? And it just wasn't clear to me why I had tried so hard at life leading up to this point to do something that I was unsure of my impact. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter to me how much, like, EBITDA margin these software businesses are making, whether it's going from 25% to 28%, really, I could not care less about that at all. And actually, that is the fundamental goal of a private equity fund, because that reflects how much profit you're making. And so I was like, well, I am not aligned to this job, and I'm not aligned to many of the people that are really excited about the prospect of increased EBITDA margins. And I think that meant that I was a little bit out of place, or I felt out of place. And I felt like I needed to make the move quite quickly, because the allure of the job, I think, is no matter what sort of doubts you have, they shower you with money so that you sort of forget about it. You sort of get this amnesia triggered by the amount of cash that you have around you, and the promise of always getting more. And so I didn't want to get trapped in a gilded cage, and I just thought, if I need to break out of this cycle early on before it really becomes something quite hard to break away from, like, just basically being addicted to money is something that I wanted to break away from before it became a problem. So yeah.
Do you feel like you're having more impact in your current role compared to your time at PE?
That's an interesting one. Like, that is an interesting question. I mean, the work I do now is, like, trying to scale climate tech ventures or ventures that have social impact, with the idea that, you know, there are really cool solutions out there in the private markets, but they're all at lab stage or, like, one pilot plant stage. And really, for them to have a global impact and shift the needle for climate change in the right direction, they need to be operating at a global scale. And so that is the idea. I suppose the amount of personal impact I'm having, I'm not sure whether it's, like, tremendously more. Like, but it's definitely not nothing. But I can't say that I'm, like, monumentally shifting the landscape or anything. But what I can be really sure and proud of is that I'm actively working in an area that isn't detrimental to the planet and its peoples, in the sense that what the company stands for and what I stand for by working there is fundamentally aligned to my worldviews of wanting, like, a healthier, more sustainable world. I'm not really sure if my personal job, which is the kind of the funnel into this whole VC accelerator ecosystem, so I bring in the companies that we decide to help, I'm not sure if that role is, like, extremely important. I mean, it is really extremely important for the company, because obviously if we need to bring in the right companies to support. But yeah, it doesn't feel like I'm doing an Elon Musk, you know, but it definitely feels like I'm doing no harm, and that does feel really, really good.
Yeah. And how do you, touching on that point, how do you identify which companies to bring in? Do you have a set scorecard? Is it just you reaching out to people and like whatever you think is interesting? What does that look like?
It's a bit of both. So we do have a scorecard because at the end of the day, we have to be sure that they have a scalable business model and that they're a good business, standalone business. But then they also need to have impact. So the companies that we like to work with are companies that generate impact as well as profit. And so the more profit they make, the more impact they're having. And so to verify that they have impact is extremely key, but sometimes really, really obvious for these companies. And then it's all about kind of seeing whether they have a really good business model. And so the same type of questions and that you'd ask in a consulting firm when you're doing a due diligence for a project for a company is still very applicable here. And so the sort of questions you're asking yourself and the founders are very, very similar. So is the revenue scalable? How is the market? The competitive dynamics, is it fragmented? Does it have very large players who can just eat you up if they decide to? Like, what is your technological defensibility? Is it harder for people to catch up to your technology? Or are you just based on a software that anyone can build? And then if so, you know, what makes you like a much more scalable solution than other players? Production scalability is also huge in terms of what we need to test, because, you know, say an emissions tracking software is very easy to scale because it's just software, you roll it out, maybe some onboarding that's difficult, but nothing compared to like a new biotech company needing to make a new factory, or say carbon neutral cement that just needs to make gigantic factories in line to scale. And so in terms of impact, that's amazing, but in terms of production scalability, you're thinking, what timelines are you operating on? Is it 10 years or is it 15 years? That doesn't really seem viable for a lot of VC investment who operate on a much smaller timescale. And so those sort of questions are really easy, like really important to test, because they're still relevant. It still kind of matters how fast they're going to grow and how large they're going to grow in their end game. So yeah, all of those questions become really relevant, but it's also really, really fascinating to be able to ask those in a fast growing industry like biotech or these climate techs, new solutions that are disrupting the way that we do things. It is just fascinating to look, like, think about it. And I think the thing that I enjoy about my job the most is the fact that we are industry agnostic. So we don't care whether the company's, you know, doing carbon capture and sequestration, or a solar, like wind renewable energy company, or a kind of plant-based food company, or new materials for fashion, whatever, we deal with them. But then each company will have very different market dynamics and each company specific dynamics. And that's what I used to enjoy a lot about consulting, the variety of thinking that comes with the job. And I seem to have been able to translate that here into understanding a lot about the different types of climate tech companies. So that is one of the joys. But yeah, we sit down with a lot of founders. I ask them a lot of questions about their business model, and we kind of rate them on a scorecard, because if you're doing a volume game, you sort of have to do that. And then we decide, we have an internal process of discussing the companies and then deciding which ones we want to bring in.
A final question, which I ask to everyone on the show, is if you had any advice for your younger self, and I mean, this is like Min in high school, you know, like 16-year-old Min having now been through university, first job, second job, third job, you know, and the time that obviously that you've had to reflect across them, what would that piece of advice be?
Gosh, that one's hard. I think my younger self was very, very much focused on the idea of money reflecting success. And I think that's what motivated me to study economics, when really the things that I'm like really interested in are probably more like physics or like philosophy. And so I would have done that, except I thought you'd make no money if you study those things. And, you know, I guess my, and that leads me to think my advice to my younger self is really just like follow what you are passionate about. Because what I know now is that a lot of people who study physics and a lot of people who study philosophy still can end up at my place, if not somewhere more impressive. And that's not really a barrier for what you do in life. And so I think I was very engrossed in this idea that like money equates to happiness and success. And so I just want to like relax that assumption a little bit.
That was Min on the latest episode of Secrets of the City. If you like the show, don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening in, and I'll speak to you next time.